of the 80s. Yeah. People really would rather do that.
It wasn't a good year.
So, I thought we could do just a check-in where you just say your name to introduce yourself. And how about just something about the election? Like, something that hit you about the election, whatever it is.
Do you want to start with just asking people if they're okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, too. A couple people who couldn't come tonight asked us to audio record this, and so Al's taping it but not doing video. Is everybody cool with their audio being recorded in the conversation? No, and if you're not, it's totally fine. We don't need to do it. So
we'll stop the meeting right now.
Yeah. Don't go home. Yeah. Well, we'll still have the meeting to record it. So again, the check-in thing is just, yeah, your name, you can also say how you're doing, and then something about the election, some reflection, some things that are bad, some facts, some whatever. So I'll start. My name's Andy. I'm with Rochester Indie Media, and I'm going to be facilitating the discussion tonight based on the Howard Zinn article. And cool if you read it. If not, I'm going to give a quick recap of it, and it's not like you absolutely have to have read it to participate in the discussion.
Just like
right. Exactly. And also, as a facilitator, like a lot of you probably already know this, but I'll also kind of keep track of who would like to speak. So, like, if you have a comment or something, and to add to the discussion, just raise your hand and I'll keep a stack of people, just like, you know, a line, and then I'll let you know when it's your turn. And other than that, we're going to wrap up by 9. So, I guess that's it. Let's see some...
Start introductions with
the Oliver. Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure.
This is
Oliver. Yeah, why don't you start with Oliver?
Okay, yeah. This is Oliver. I bailed him out of a city jail about 4 years ago on Verona Street.
How did he feel about the election?
Oh, he's indifferent. He's a dog, you know, they don't care.
What did you get for?
Picked up over on the northwest side. Yeah. yeah, the neighborhood, yeah, must be pretty rough. But, when I say on the election, he's friendly. I don't know, I thought it was bullshit for the most part. It's just, everyone's just kind of in a frenzy. It's a weird state that everyone gets whipped into, like, pretty rapidly, like the last 2 weeks before the election. I don't really know what the election, at least on a presidential level, like how much it really matters or not. So it's just weird to see like how people change, get really excited about it, and just kind of goes away. Yeah, presidents usually end up doing the same thing they did before. Nothing changes. Jim, I'm sorry, yeah. I forgot about that, yeah. I'm Jim. That's okay. Yeah. I saw a weird anti-socialist commercial on CNN after, like, everyone voted already. And it was, like, just right before they announced who's president. Yeah, it was weird. Just talking about it. It's some, I don't know what country he's from. Some Eastern European country. He had some kind of Eastern European accent. And whatever country he's from, like you said, socialism is horrible, and like people were poor, and you can never be successful, and all this crazy stuff. It was weird to see like probably some independent just like right-wing troll like putting commercials on like for millions of dollars to like weird people out about socialism or any kind of idea that's remotely close to it. I don't know. That was kind of overwhelming. I'm glad it's over.
So you wanna be vice? Yeah.
I think we're all glad it's over. My name's Ron, and I'm with TV also. The thing that I hate, you know, as an anarchist, I should be just totally, above the spray. But I find myself getting caught up in it, and like, you know, just because the right wingers are so obnoxious, it is like the secret supper. But so I did get caught up in a little bit. And you're right, it is mostly bullshit, but I just... I just remember which one I would have preferred picking the next Supreme Court justices. Yeah. And, that makes it a little easier to swallow.
Yeah, participate on a local level.
I'm Ted. I got skipped in that door around there.
I thought we were hopscotch.
No. You didn't say anything about hopscotch. You said top quarter.
Every public.
Because I'm like,
the
that.
Right.
How's it going? This must be the Indian independent meeting.
My name's Ted. I have stayed pretty much out of the fray. I see posts occasionally, like the one that annoyed me, the meme that annoyed me the other day was Obama with vote across the top, smiling, waving, I was like, really? And then there's that report that not even 24 hours after he's elected, like he was bombing Yemen again, drone attacks, all that, Just like, I think he did that when he got presidency the first time. I like watching the Colbert Report, John Stewart occasionally to like, get some laughs out of it and just see how stupid it, the whole circus is. Reconfirms for me the belief that spaces like this and communities of resistance are vital to actually changing from the ground up the dynamic that seems to be in place right now. And I think Howard Zinn actually talks about it a little bit, but it's like the idea that the citizenry, the people, are the ones that drive this country, not the government, even though the government wants to tell everyone that it's them that drives the country and determines everything. And to some degree it is. I'm not going to take that away from them. I don't make foreign policy decisions. I don't make economic decisions. But I was watching this great thing called Beyond Elections and in a South American city, I'm forgetting what it is, maybe it's Puerto Alegre, they have participatory budgeting. So in the city, the community gets together, and it's a citywide thing, and people actually have a say in what their tax money is used for, and how much gets used and where it gets used. And I just thought that was so neat. It's like such a mind-boggling idea to even like consider that. It's not mind-boggling at all, but it's fascinating that it's it's being applied, and I'd love to see that applied here in this city. But I feel like this is a stepping stone to that. So, anyways, Barack Obama won. Mitt Romney didn't. A bunch of Republicans are shooting their mouths off, and life continues.
So I already said my name, but we keep going this way.
Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with going popcorn style. It's just really confusing to me.
I felt slightly.
Ted felt skipped because we're really used to this direction. So anyway, I was just gonna say it was weird. I think yesterday and today I kept hearing this term, the fiscal cliff. Did anyone else hear this? Did Obama say this in a speech or something? Because it's just like this new term, like we're all just going to repeat this phrase over and over again. And
it has to do with legislation on purpose.
Right. No, I mean, I know that it has a specific thing, but they're like, the election, like, people don't know what to do when they're not covering this campaign, the media. So suddenly they just, like, latch on to this, like, whatever they can, like floating icebergs or something. So it's like, let's talk about the fiscal cliff instead of the election. It's like it's weird panic mode.
Fear mode.
There's this, like, vacuum.
Something else to be afraid of.
Anyway.
I'm Lily. I'm a photographer. I'm with Indy Media. And as far as the election goes, kind of got caught up in that craziness through some of the Facebook groups I'm in. It started out being, a general discussion of the issues, and then, of course, some people you would see a clear division of who was for old bummer and turd sandwich. Pretty much became one giant
douche
mess at the end of it, where I was trying to watch it, and as you would see, one state go red or blue, and they'd say projection being Romney, and then they'd say another state projection being Obama. I gave up on it about 1:30 in the morning, saying, you know what, screw it, the internet's here. It'll be somewhere by morning. I'm just glad it's all over and Mittens didn't get it. He scares me. You can see I've spent too much time online and speaking in memes.
I'm Catherine, and I had more fun with the election than I expected to, given my radical stance on almost every issue. It was really disturbing until I met Jill Stein, and spending an evening with her and having her be in the right place on every single issue was pretty thrilling. Even though I knew she had no chance of election, I did really feel like there was a spokesperson who was taking risks, and her running mate is a woman I have enormous respect for. As a take back to land, Sherry Hakalada is a hero for her stance. And I just love having a candidate who was arrested 2 times for the campaign. That just seemed like an amazing accomplishment. I don't know that that's ever happened before. So watching Democracy Now! And the alternative coverage had lots of very good people talking about the real issues. So I didn't have any of the vote counting and the exuberance and watching the people cheer and so on from the floor. I just was listening to really good people talk. So that made it much more interesting to hear.
By the way, how many votes did Jill Stein get?
She wound up with, at the last count I saw, was about 0.6% of the national population. So it wasn't, she was hoping to get about 3 to 5% in order to start bringing the Green Party a share of the finance. So she planned this election for me. We listed the groundwork for the next effort. And she's really good. She's so fast and intelligent on every single issue. I doubt anyone that's going to be more articulate than she may be, but I don't know. She was just right on
it. Okay, I'm Paige. I'm with Indie Media. I'm just glad it's over with, and I don't believe anything the Republicans are saying right now about how they're going to work with the Democrats and how they're going to. It just seems like all fake lying stuff, and they're just going to screw them over again, you know. But I think my big thing is now we have to work to overthrow Citizens United, and we got to get that out of the way before the next presidential election comes around, so we don't have to go through the same crap that we went through this time with all the negative ads and stuff. So I just think we need to revamp the whole system and get it working and better, but it's probably gonna not happen. But I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try and work with the group. So.
I'm Jack. I'm unaffiliated with any official group or media. I thought the election was pretty weird. It seemed just like a sports game sort of thing. There's just lots of people yelling and only people who are arguing with them caring. Again, it's one of those sad things of, oh, it's great that the worst guy didn't get in, and that's sad, but that's how we think. And that being said, even people on both sides, I really found disappointing sort of things they said. Like after, I almost had a little like meltdown. Luckily, I think mostly aboard of it online. The election's already done. There was all these Democrats just going on and trash talking Republicans. And I was like, think revenge and resentment and a sense of superiority are helping your side look intelligent or anything. It made me feel gross. I was like, yes, that's the thing is, like, I can't say I'm glad it's over because it is not. On the upside, though, I was happy to hear about Maine and Washington. I was happy to hear about, what was it, Colorado and
Washington?
And Washington.
And Oregon.
Oh, or, was it Oregon?
Oregon.
That'll be a different, that's the gay marriage thing is looking pretty good, I think. People will go kind of nuts. That seems like a done deal. The marijuana legalization is going to be a whole issue still.
I want to move to Seattle now.
So we'll see how it goes. And Elizabeth Warren. I'm generally apolitical, I think. You just have cultural views that automatically means political. I think to actually being political is ignoring a lot of stuff and confuses the matter. Elizabeth Warren seems to have a lot of critical thinking skills and a lot of emotional maturity, which are really all that come from a genuine people. And she has both of them to a great degree, and I'm both very happy and kind of stunned that she's elected. I'm usually a little bit cynical about those things, but so that's good. As far as the president, most of the stuff, I think most things, day-to-day life is going to be pretty similar. It's not to put down political action or anything, but I got in a lot of trouble talking about when Bush got elected in 2000. I was like, good. Everyone's been being lazy about doing anything, let him get elected, and this will now radicalize a bunch of liberals. This kind of works, and this will be fine. This is what happens if we go back and forth, like at past 200 years. It's fine. It'll be fine.
My name's Ashley. I think I'm pretty happy listening to everything that I didn't have to hear or see any of the clips because I don't even have basic cable. I don't watch TV at all, really, so that was nice to avoid that this year. But I definitely agree, and it's really disheartening that a lot of people vote to keep the worst option out of office. That's really, like, disheartening when it comes down to election time, and I feel like watching the debates and stuff, I get stressed out watching it because it's like whoever wins because they can make the most insincere, I don't know, it's like who can lie the best, I don't know how to phrase that right, but it's like who can make the best promises that they're never going to keep kind of thing. So,
did you see that? In the article, Nation decides who's sociopath to be president.
No.
The only article I read in the past month, I was like, this is exactly
what I said. That's cool.
So you all wrote just a couple of days ago.
Hey, welcome.
Hi.
How's it going?
We're doing meetings and something about the election.
Oh. I'm Ben. And something about the election, the guy was trying to get elected won. That means I'm good at my job, ish. Yeah. That's about it.
Good-ish.
Ish.
Cool, and there were a couple more people here and two people that came in after we started, so we can do Al, Susan, and then these two guys.
I'm Al, and call me partisan if you want, but this planet dodged a bullet on Tuesday night.
Indeed.
I'm Susan, and I think I was more, the things that excited me was I liked that there were some really intelligent, articulate women that were elected that I'm really excited about, and that our government is getting more and more women. I hope that eventually that it will reflect our, demographics. But when there's 20 women in the Senate, and as I said, I think that there are some women that are elected that are just like really smart, articulate, don't necessarily think things will change. I always think that people don't get dirty before they get into clean, but you know, I like the fact that there are some smart, articulate people. And as somebody who's been in the fighting the reproductive rights thing for a long time, I think that it's not exciting, but I was excited that finally people are realizing how fully extreme these people are, that, you know, it's not about abortion, it's about control of women, and that maybe this will wake people up to realize that, you know, especially young women who have had the privilege of all the fighting that went on before, and that, and men, you know, because let's face it, it affects both of us, men and women, but that they will get more involved in this issue. And last thing, I really was excited about some of the proposals. I like the GMO labeling, even though it didn't win in California. I was really excited about that. I was really excited about the cannabis and legalization, and I'm hoping that that will, you know, start to transform things. You know, it started in the States with a lot of issues, and three states at one time is a good start. And, you know, I know that, you know, other states have decriminalized it, and so I've been medical marijuana. So I'm hoping that this is really a trend to stop this war on drugs, because it has just, you know, been detrimental to the society.
I'm curious to see the federal government's
response.
So I think those were the things that made me more excited. As far as I'm concerned. Oh, and one other thing, I hope that people realize that last time when Obama was, and the Hope He Changed thing, that he actually, oh God, that's a Sarah Palin line, isn't it? But anyway, I really hope that they don't sit back and say, well, you know, Democrats have more, you know, control in that, and realize that you need to get in the streets to change things and really fight, because otherwise, you know, we're not going to have a chance of doing anything to change.
Cool. So,
I think,
yeah,
gentlemen and Ben.
Oh, hi. My name's Tom, and I think the thing that I found best about selection is, although I don't think the government is suddenly going to have all the answers, I think that we proved that Citizens United ruling wasn't necessarily over. We overcame it in a sense. We overcame a lot of massive super PAC spending. And so I guess money doesn't completely buy election, it can have some substance. And I'm also told that we elected the first Buddhist senator and the first Hindu congressperson. So I think perspective and diversity are key, and I'm happy about those two things.
Folks, I'm
Ben.
I'm a member of Rochester New Media. I saw the election on the internet, which I've never done before. It was a weird experience. That's all I want to say about it.
Hubert, did you want to join?
No, I'm
okay.
No.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't see you over there. How's it going?
Do you want me to get
your stuff?
Oh, sure.
Good idea.
Yes. So was everybody able to access the article at least? And then hopefully read it, but if not, we can do a quick synopsis for about 5 minutes, and then Ted actually just had a good suggestion, which, because we actually have a pretty good sized group tonight, maybe break off into a few groups, two or three groups, not too many, and then discuss sort of parts of the article and then come back together. Let's see. Why don't we start? I'll just sort of give a quick sort of synopsis of the article, and then hopefully people that also read it can jump in if I forgot anything. So we'll be discussing the Howerton's piece, The Use and Abuse of History, tonight, which is about sort of his personal reasons for getting into history writing, and really deals with sort of like some of the what he looks at as pitfalls of history writing. and maybe a defense of his own style, which is openly sort of openly taking a side in history, like and explaining why he feels like that's an effective way to look at you know, any sort of individual episodes, but also like how history fits together. And the reason we picked this for a media piece is because, and he mentions it a number of times in the article, is because it relates really well to journalism, because the same exact pitfalls happen in journalism, right? So one of the main ones is this sort of myth of objectivity, that you can actually, you know, ask a question about history without having a position. That, like, there's all kinds of things that we would, well, first of all, the question that we ask is based on a whole, you know, our whole upbringing and our position in society and all kinds of factors. And then what we choose to focus on, so all kinds of things that we don't ask and omit in exploring historical questions are also part of informing that bias. So he's saying, well, be open about it. Like, I'm taking this position, I'm not gonna like change facts, and I'm very willing to have my mind changed about my assumptions. But what he's not willing to change are actually his values. Like, that's sort of like where he's coming from, that he has these sort of, he actually describes them as Jeffersonian, but like, you know, values of, you know, equality and freedom and all kinds of good things. That those are sort of what's informing and why he's interested in it, and that it's okay, like, if that's what people are worried about, like, that somehow your values will be changed, that can actually be a separate question. And so he gets into some there were a few other sort of pitfalls. I remember one was something about the way history is taught, sort of the trivia approach to history, which is that we're gonna be given these sort of little isolated facts that you have to remember, and then, you know, sort of taking it all out of context and any sort of interesting questions not being a part of it. And he actually came up with one example he points to is like some New York Times poll, I think, that said how bad American students are at history, and because they don't know all these presidents and presidential facts and who's president when. And he said, well, they didn't look at any of this sort of like 20th century stuff, like recent stuff that actually is really affecting us now. And this sort of reinforces this idea that the only important things to know about history are like these leaders that aren't really connected to us, and that sort of has this message of disempowering us, that like the important questions aren't like, you know, day-to-day people struggles, but like what's, you know, who was 13th, 14th president, and, you know,
when did he have his gallbladder surgery?
Yeah, that's right. That was and it was some president, was it Zachary Taylor or something? Right. That, yeah. Yeah, so there's that, the myth of objectivity, the trivializing history, and he talks a little bit about like in this sort of, you know, historians, like sort of establishment historians, drive towards objectivity, that they make some pretty strange arguments that really show their bias. And so there was just like one kind of funny thing I'm going to read quickly, and then I'd like people to jump in with things that I forgot from the synopsis. It was from this history textbook that they use in school called Legacy of Freedom. And this is supposed to be like objective history. Like, so this is, at the beginning of the textbook, they have this to the student part. And it says, Legacy of Freedom will aid you in understanding the economic growth and development of our country. The book presents the developments and benefits of our country's free enterprise economic system. You will read about the various ways that American business, industry, and agriculture have used scientific and technological advances to further the American free market system. This system allows businesses to generate profits while providing consumers with a variety of quality products from which to choose in the marketplace, thus enabling our people to enjoy a high standard of living. So I don't know, that sounds kind of biased to me. Yeah, I'll stop there, and if people are willing to fill in the gaps there, and then we can just launch into discussing. Why don't we do like a couple more minutes, if I forgot anything, of a synopsis of this.
Well, he points out that traditional history doesn't show the brutality that comes as part of capitalism, the viciousness and the class system, and the treatment of people. His examples were miners who were brutalized, murdered, slaughtered in a massacre, and nothing of that ever appeared in any history books that were easily accessible to students in high school and college. So we had to go looking for that kind of information. So that the structures of our culture that tell us what history is are built on a whole series of distortions and things left out.
I think that one is reminding me of the quote, I don't know who said it, but the one who wins is the one who writes history.
History is written by the winners.
And it reminds me too of what happened in Panama in 89, how that got completely blacked out just about by the mainstream media, and it's
Operation
not
just because.
And it's not spoken of in the history books, at least not the ones that we have here.
I'm just going to jump in, Lily. If there's anything, just like we'll definitely get to that, like how this relates to history and stuff. But if there's anything directly related to the article that in terms of that people would need to know to have the discussion.
He also talks about like learning about the kind of information can also be rejected by people reading it too, like forcing something completely different from everything they've ever learned before. You know, just like that's their reality tell. That's like all they've ever known about history, and if they learn about something like that, it'll make them kind of lose faith in all media and all history. It's like they do it at a young age. So
there's something insecure about, like,
Yeah,
and I'm remembering too that there's this sort of like conservative bias in history that he talks about, that the things that get mentioned just get mentioned all the time, and if you go outside of that, it's like, you know, you might not be respected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just to tie it back to the journalism piece, indie media, I think the mission on the global page is like, you know, dedicated to telling their own truths about their own reality, so their passionate declarations of their life, you know. And I think Zinn really tries to hammer that home, that like, even though, you know, you don't, Fox News can say that they're balanced in, you know, objective or whatever, well, fair and balanced, I think it's their terminology. They're obviously going from a very specific ideological point of view, and they have very specific assumptions like what do those newscasts, and when I read this article, I just replace academics' history with like news or journalism, and it's really interesting to read it in that kind of context, because everything he's saying basically can be almost mirrored to this other thing, because journalism is really the writing of history from like a contemporary point of view, and I could go on with that, but I'm just going
to
leave that there.
Well, I mean, I think we're at a good point to go into discussion. I saw your hand run, but maybe we could take that and then just divide into two groups. And then
my tubes?
Sure, we could do that. That sounds good.
What did we get for this? Sign-up sheet next to you?
But, oh yeah, and the sign-up sheet. And I was thinking, like, just a really general question about this, sort of what are assumptions about what objectivity is in both history and journalism. Like, that's a really broad theme, but, like, maybe the two groups can discuss that, and we could get together with, like, 20 minutes. So that would be, like, 50 minutes to discuss, and then 20 minutes to come back together and just, like, share two groups discussed. Is that cool?
Yep.
Okay. So why don't we do that? We'll count off. Ron, why don't you make your comment first, and then we'll count off.
Briefly, I know I've read this essay before. I wonder if it was this forward to people's history or something. It sounds weird.
I think it might be. I think it might be, because I just started reading it. I've read it before, and
The only thing that I've read is that people's history.
So I think it's a book from a book of essays.
Yeah,
quoted from the history book.
But he writes very similarly.
I listened to a recording.
Anyway, there's a longer, similar piece, older, an essay by Noam Chomsky, which is called Objectivity and Liberal Scholarship, which covered, makes basically the same points in a Chomsky-esque way. That's available online by itself, too, in addition to the book. Anyway, that's all for now.
What was the Chomsky? What was the title?
Objectivity and Liberal Scholarship.
Okay. Cool, so let's do Ted's idea and count off by twos. That reminds me of gym class for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to play dodgeball.
Next week we'll have the parachute, so you're going to come next week.
Yeah.
One.
Oh, no.